Okay, I lost the recording. I'm going to redo this. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly call. Today is Monday, March 24th, 2025. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern Time. If you're listening over Rumble or YouTube and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions at nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on the donation tab, top right side of our website. Okay, we're going to pick up with our scripture reading where we left off last week. We're in the Gospel of John, and we're in chapter 20, read by Alexander Forty. Gospel of John.
Chapter 20. The first day of the week cometh Mary Magdalene early, when it was yet dark, unto the sepulchre, and seeth the stone taken away from the sepulchre. Then she runneth and cometh to Simon Peter, and to the other disciple, whom Jesus loved, and saith unto them, They have taken away the Lord out of the sepulchre, and we know not where they have laid him. Peter therefore went forth, and that other disciple, and came to the sepulchre. So they ran both together. And the other disciple did outrun Peter, and came first to the sepulchre. And he, stooping down and looking in, saw the linen clothes lying, yet went he not in. Then cometh Simon Peter following him, and went into the sepulchre, and seeth the linen clothes lie, and the napkin that was about his head, not lying with the linen clothes, but wrapped together in a place by itself. Then went in also that other disciple, which came first to the sepulchre, and he saw and believed. For as yet they knew not the scripture, that he must rise again from the dead. Then the disciples went away again unto their own home. But Mary stood without at the sepulchre weeping. And as she wept, she stooped down and looked into the sepulchre, and seeth two angels in white sitting, the one at the head and the other at the feet where the body of Jesus had lain. And they say unto her, Woman, why weepest thou? She saith unto them, Because they have taken away my Lord, and I know not where they have laid him. And when she had thus said, she turned herself back and saw Jesus standing, and knew not that it was Jesus. Jesus saith unto her, Woman, why weepest thou? Whom seekest thou? She, supposing him to be the gardener, saith unto him, Sir, if thou have borne him hence, tell me where thou hast laid him, and I will take him away. Jesus saith unto her, Mary. She turned herself, and saith unto him, Rabboni, which is to say, Master. Jesus saith unto her, Touch me not, for I am not yet ascended to my Father. But go to my brethren, and say unto them, I ascend unto my Father, and your Father, and to my God, and your God. Mary Magdalene came and told the disciples that she had seen the Lord, and that he had spoken these things unto her. Then the same day at evening, being the first day of the week, when the doors were shut where the disciples were assembled for fear of the Jews, came Jesus and stood in the midst, and saith unto them, Peace be unto you. And when he had so said, he showed unto them his hands and his side. Then were the disciples glad when they saw the Lord. Then said Jesus to them again, Peace be unto you. As my Father hath sent me, even so send I you. And when he had said this, he breathed on them, and saith unto them, Receive ye the Holy Ghost. Whosoever sins ye remit, they are remitted unto them. And whosoever sins ye retain, they are retained. But Thomas, one of the twelve, called Didymus, was not with them when Jesus came. The other disciples therefore said unto him, We have seen the Lord. But he said unto them, Except I shall see in his hands the print of the nails, and put my finger into the print of the nails, and thrust my hand into his side, I will not believe. And after 8 days, again his disciples were within, and Thomas with them. Then came Jesus, the doors being shut, and stood in the midst, and said, Peace be unto you. Then saith he to Thomas, Reach hither thy finger, and behold my hands. And reach hither thy hand, and thrust it into my side. And be not faithless, but believing. And Thomas answered and said unto him, My Lord and my God. Jesus saith unto him, Thomas, Because thou hast seen me, thou hast believed. Blessed are they that have not seen, and yet have believed. And many other signs truly did Jesus in the presence of his disciples, which are not written in this book. But these are written, that ye might believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that believing ye might have life through his name.
Okay, Jen, do we have any questions or announcements tonight?
Greg, before we start, John, people are sending longer and longer almost affirmations to me on questions and up to 2 pages long, and we just can't deal with that on these calls. So please limit the length of your submission to a half a page or so. You get into so much detail, it's impossible for John, and there are a lot of references to code and so on that would have to be looked up, and sometimes there's even one or two attachments to the question. So please take pity on us and just send us a half a page or less is better. Okay, the first question that we have tonight is, how can I sue the people involved in my CPS case, such as lawyers, judges, and everyone involved in the case, for using my property against my wishes? My parental rights were terminated, and I wish to sue them for enjoying my property that God gave me, my child, and I want to be compensated for such. How would I go about doing that?
Okay, well, first of all, you have to know how to do that. You have to understand how the courts work. You have to understand due process, the procedure of that due process within those courts. And I do sympathize with your problem, with your situation. I've spoken over the years to many, many people. Someone's got an open eye leading through. So anyway, so I do sympathize with you. It's a horrible thing when they do something like that. You're not going to get a lawyer that's really going to do a good job, most likely. I mean, it'd be a rare thing if you did find a lawyer that really would represent you and fight the system. Also, lawyers probably will say it's too late because they've given your children to someone else and so on and so forth. And all of that is just a bunch of lies from Hades, in my opinion, because we have common law. Due process is the key. Due process is a requirement. And knowing how these people work, you probably never got due process. They just steamrolled you into the situation, claim of guilt upon you, and then executed the control over your life by taking your children. There's only one way. It's going to take some time. And that is, first of all, you have to learn the law. You have to learn how things work. Now, we did do a course online. It's available. It's a 90-hour course. It's under Education Starts Here. You come down to Court Access in the Common Law, and you click on that, and it'll give you some instructions and information on how to join that course. And down on the bottom of the page, we give the first 3 hours in here for free because people get a taste or a flavor, so to speak, of how the course is going to go. But also, once you get into the course, you'll also find a table of contents, okay, and when you click on that, these two drop-downs off of that will only show up to people who are in the course, and the course is there permanently. You'll be able to come up at any time to take this course, to finish the course, to come back and re-review the course. If you're doing a court case, you can be going through parts of the course where you're in, if you're working on just writing your papers, you can go in here for references and, just work things out. And as the case proceeds, how the due process works. So everything starts with the pleadings, the cause of actions, the defenses, the motions, how all that works, memorandums of law, the rules, and so on. So there's a lot of information here. It's 90 hours long. A lot of people come in and ask questions, and they don't know how the court system works, and they expect a short answer. There is no short answer. I mean, I can give advice and thoughts and ideas if you understand the basics, if you understand the structure, and you know what to do with the information that I or others might give you. But generally speaking, if you understand these things, then ultimately you're going to want to take this in for into the courts for a denial of due process, from robbing or stealing your children from you. And of course, the bottom line is the due process that was never given. I have never heard of due process truly being given. And remember, you know, when you go into one of these administrative courts, that is not due process. And by the way, any administrative court, when they make a decision, it's just a suggestion. It's not a complete absolute. But people will run with it and say, okay, yeah, I agree, or no, I disagree, and then they'll appeal. It's not till you get to the appellate courts that you really get the final conclusion. But the problem is you really didn't get due process. That's the problem. And that's what they've done with our judicial system. They've turned the whole system upside down, and they've taken common law and equity, combined it together, and then they called it civil law, which brings you into statutes, and then everything is statutory. So, again, it's an uphill battle, but you can't even begin to fight the battle until you understand, the rules, the plans, what's going on. And by the way, equity in itself, which is supposed to, equity is supposed to mean justice, but equity ultimately identifies with statutes and codes and different things. It's legislative law is what it's called. But it's not the law of the land. It is the law of the land because it operates within the equity side of the court. And the equity side of the court identifies with people who are working for the government or government agencies or people operating commercial activities. You know, then they get into the rules, the regulations that apply to whatever it is that they're doing, and they have to be upheld by that. But even that equity, which is legislative law, operates under the rules of common law, okay? And common law, the rules of common law really is very simple. It's ultimately just common sense. That's what the really common law is, common sense. Statements that can't be denied, everybody would agree upon, or every right-minded person would agree upon anyway. You'll always get a clown here or there, but that's irrelevant. But there are certain statements that are so powerful, so strong, that it can't be denied. Innocent until proven guilty, okay? No one's going to argue with that. No right-minded person is going to argue with that. For every injury, there must be a remedy. No right-minded person is going to argue with that, you know? All men are created equal, you know? Our Declaration of Independence is written with eight ancient principles that Jefferson found as he was looking and researching in order to discover what kind of a government we should have. And he founded these eight principles, eight ancient principles, which he laid out, and you will find them in the Declaration of Independence, and you will find them in the Constitution, particularly in the preamble to the Constitution. But anyway, again, getting back to the question, or the answer to the question, first you have to understand, and then you can take information and apply it. So yeah, there are things you could do. We can assist you with some thoughts and ideas, but you have to understand the process. So if that's the case, if you do understand how it works, then you can ask some questions concerning that. We can get into some details and give you some information. You know, but we can't get into people's cases. A lot of people send me cases. They send me all kinds of papers, and I don't have time to read them to begin with. I'm busy doing what I'm doing. But I do try to be helpful with people as much as I can. I can't run your case. I can't write your case, but I can send you to different places where you can look at different things, memorandums, get a lot of different ideas, look at a lot of our court cases, certain cases that we've structured, for instance, for non-judicial foreclosures, you know, we can share something like that. It's probably about 6 or 8 pages. If you're going up against the IRS, which that's not going to be a big problem no more anyway, but if you were, I've written a case for that you can work through that. So some cases that I have written, you can take a look at, but again, and traffic cases, you know, as a matter of fact, you find a lot of that under Education Starts Here, come down to law, and then over to court forms and process. And by the way, if I'm talking too fast, this is recorded, and you can find that recording under today's issues and come down to the NLA Monday Open Forum videos, which I try to get them up at the end of the evening. But in any event, through here you'll find a lot of examples of different things: demand for oaths, common law trust, instruction forms for traffic court, challenging jurisdiction, forms to move your case for cause, that's to the federal court, instruction forms for the habeas corpus, how to enforce the decision, notice and demands, and then a lot of different things. Memorandums are very, very powerful, and you can cut and paste all kinds of things out of that and just take it from there. When you do that, though, you've got to be careful because the footnotes won't come over with you because they're in PDF, so you've got to go actually copy the footnotes on your own and place the footnotes within your document. And we do give information in our course on how to do footnotes and different things of that nature in some videos down on the end or the bottom of our course. You'll find some videos on Word, how to use Word. And footnotes is a very important thing to use with any paper you write. But as we're talking about this, I'll take the opportunity concerning particularly federal courts. I just recently released a book. So it's up for, it's been published now, it's up online, you can get it if you're interested in it. And the name of that, the last book, is Understanding the Federal Courts. It lays out the structure, how things works, and gets into some, you know, a lot of details, particularly on how they stole our courts and what we need to do to fix them. And that's done primarily in memorandums that I have written and put into this book. So anybody interested in that, you can find that book here at this page on the right side of our website. So anyway, again, anybody's got a court case, you've got to understand the law as far as understanding, you know, due process and how things work in the courts, how it's structured. And then, you know, the information I can give you might be valuable for your case. So, and you always got to think things out when you write a case, by the way. You got to be, you know, I write a case and I'll work diligently to get the full case written, and then I'll go back and I'll read it through 10, 20 times. I just read it over and over and over again, constantly changing things, you know. That's how you perfect your case, you know, changing, using better words, trying to find better words or phrases, and then you have the opportunity to take out things, I shouldn't have said that, or I didn't say this too well, or whatever the case may be. You know, anybody writing a case, you want to read it over and over and over. And the other thing you want to do is read it in the light of our memorandums, because the memorandums are written in such a way, it's instructional, of course, it's educational. But I think it also reflects the writings to some degree as far as, you know, the way the case, the way the points are made. When you read the Supreme Court cases, you know, when there's a decision made by a judge, a Supreme Court judge particularly, and we do have a lot of those cases up there. We have Marbury versus Madison, we have United States versus Williams, and numerous other cases, landmark cases that are very, very important. They give a lot of power to the people. It reveals a lot of power to people. It doesn't give it to them. It reveals it. To some degree, it gives it to them, because it's what the courts have to follow is the decisions of the Supreme Court. They have to stay within that structure. Unfortunately, they don't. They hardly ever do, but they're supposed to be. We need to get our courts back to that. All right, anyway, I guess that's the best I can say. You know, and if you have any specific short questions on your case, then I can respond and you'd be able to digest it. Next question, Jan.
Okay. The Constitution allows me to confront an official, but certainly not to harass an official. Based on that theory, I went and approached the tax collector in my town. She was a very nice lady.
Oh, boy.
You may see the context of the complaint. In the context of the complaint, what happened. Later, I sued her. And I think I recently had some success in suing a tax collector in my city, like why she is collecting money from me. I filed a court case in small claims. She never showed up, and a default judgment was entered. Finally, she hired an attorney, and the judge vacated the default judgment. Later, the attorney filed a motion to dismiss. I opposed the motion and filed a cross motion to answer and compel her to my discoveries and interrogatories. Judge denied their motion to dismiss and granted me 30 days for discovery. I have personally never seen this type of stuff anywhere. Their attorney is now attacking me that my interrogatories are very ambiguous and so forth. I tried to rephrase them and send him a copy. I have attached a copy of those for you, and that's where I need some help. Could you please check if my interrogatories make any sense? Could you please add or take out anything which is required? I have a few days. This could be very big if I succeed. I'm not an attorney, and my English is not very good.
Okay, it's going to be really hard to succeed. They've already stacked the deck against you. Did they say what court they were in, particularly when they got the default?
Well, they started out in small claims and then moved up from there.
But did they say where the default actually happened? Did the default happen in small claims?
Yeah, it was entered in small claims.
Okay. If that's a county court, and even though it's a small claims court, it's still a court of record, which still allows you the availability of a jury if you request it. But you're given leeway to the judge to make that decision. So you want to check to see if it's a court of record. If it's a court of record, then a decision had been made as far as default. In order to defeat a default, they have to do two things. Number one, they have to have a darn good reason why they didn't make it to court. A death in the family. I mean, it's got to be serious, a really good reason. And number two, and they got to prove both, okay? And the second thing is they have to show there's a strong likelihood that they're going to win, okay? So without showing those two things, they can't just get rid of a default, okay? So you might want to look into that. Again, here's the big problem, What could be, it's not really, if you were just to look at the structure of the court and you were to look at the different things that are in the court, the processes, okay, due process, how things work, discovery and all that stuff, and how the paperwork starts with the pleadings and the back and forth and then it goes from there and then you get into discovery. As you work through all those things, that structure could be understood very quickly. As a matter of fact, when I started to study this, I worked that out within over a weekend, okay? But I had a lot more work to go through before I really could do anything that was worthwhile in the courts as far as writing papers are concerned. That takes time. And like anything else, you have to spend a lot of time. I mean, a lot of time reading, exploring, and writing, and practicing by writing your own memorandums. Write a case up that you plan on trying to go to court with. And then perfect it and compare it to other legal readings, particularly decisions of the Supreme Court, or maybe papers that other people have written. I've seen a lot of papers by people who have been in law for a long time, and their cases are not written very well, in my opinion. And sometimes it's way too wordy. Less is more. Remember that. Less is more. You always want to speak in a certain term and make a specific, point, and then that point, in law particularly maybe, and then you want to back that up with a memorandum. So you're keeping your case nice and clean, as short as possible, and then you can refer to memorandums and make attachments, and that keeps the case nice and clean and neat. Once you get all these different things going on in the case, this problem, this situation, they raise things, and it gets so combobulated and sort of, someone reading the case has a real tough time trying to figure out what's really going on. So those are things to remember. But again, to write, I mean, I look back at my beginning when I first started writing papers, and I look to see what I'm doing now. I mean, mine was so elementary. They were so, what I say, almost childish in a sense, I would say. The language was terrible. The points weren't clear. I mean, I thought it was great at the time because it was in my mind. Mostly it was good maybe, but putting it onto the paper, you have to really say it in a way that's powerful. So again, no, you're not going to get into a court, you know, you're not going to discover something in a couple of days or a week or even a month and then think you'd be able to be great in court and write good papers. I mean, that'd be a rarity if that could happen. So it takes time, but the more hours you put into it, you know, if you're putting in a couple hours a day over the course of a year, you'll be decent, okay? If you're putting in 6-8 hours a day, if you have that kind of time over the course of the year, you're going to be great. Okay, so it's the time you put in that makes you a good writer. And writing is the key. Writing a good case, or your pleadings are the most important thing. And to understand how things work. And to realize, and you're always writing for the appeal, okay? You're presuming your case is going to be appealed, all right? So you're writing for the appeal. The other thing is that you want to really, really stay with a lot of footnotes and express in footnotes, again, to keep it clean, and memorandums. So it takes time, and some people can escalate quicker, especially if you have a really good memory. You know, if you have a photographic memory, I mean, you can be really great at this stuff. But also, you know, and I did write a book, let me see on this one. I did write a book that I think is helpful in court. I wrote it for myself, and then I decided to publish it because I thought it would be a valuable, I'm in the wrong place, hold on. I thought it would be a valuable place, a valuable book to assist people in the courtroom. And it's a small book, it's a handbook, and it's called The Common Law Court Handbook. So anybody going into court, okay, and, you know, you really, this would be a great book to have. It covers so much information in here. And again, I wrote it for myself so that I can be able to articulate myself in court better, to be able to, at the tip of my fingers, so to speak, to be able to get different information, maybe decisions, court decisions, Supreme Court decisions particularly, of course, maybe some maxims, maybe some codes to apply against them. I mean, it covers a lot of stuff in here. So, you know, people interested in that, you can go here and you can read more information on the book. And then take it from there. So, I guess that's all I got to say on that. What's next, Jim?
Okay, how can I sue the people involved in my CPS case, such as lawyers, judges, and everyone involved in the case for using my property against my wishes? My parental rights were terminated, and I wish to sue them for enjoying my property that God gave me, my child, and I want to be compensated for such. How would I go about doing that?
Well, your principal point in your case would be due process. You're not getting due process. That gives you the ability to sue. And you could probably sue even the lawyer that might have represented you if they had one, because they usually don't, you know, really represent you as well as they should. Their first order of business is to the court. That's why certain cases will never go into a court through lawyers, because they're told they can't, and they won't let them, and they'll be chastised, even potentially could lose their so-called license. I would begin with a due process case, and it's a denial of due process. You won't be able to go after your... Yeah, in that particular case, you're not going to be able to go after your lawyer if you had one. That you'll have to sue in a different way. But as far as all the officers in the court, you could sue them for denying you due process. And it would more or less become a conspiratorial thing. You can build that case, too. And you take it into the federal court in order to have that case overturned. That's the key point. You would deny due process. That court has to cease and desist. And really, the decision, if any, was made without the due process is null and void. So that's where I would start. And in that process, okay, you want to go after the oaths and the bonds, and you want to get that into the court case, into your paperwork. But when you go into the federal court, the federal court will only hear whatever is under the Constitution. So it has to be... You can only take it in for what's called for cause. So it's got to be a constitutional cause. Due process, particularly, is a cause. Okay, Fifth and Seventh Amendment. You can probably do the Fourth, maybe. So you're going in and you're battling it on the fact that you didn't get due process, and that's the key. You don't discuss the case. You don't get into the details of the case. You're just looking to have that overturned. And you're also looking to sue those individuals for the suffering that you did, for the denying of an unalienable right. I use a rule of thumb, $1,000 face value of Morgan silver dollar coins. For every violation by each individual, and that could amount to a tremendous amount of money, you know, in a court case. So once you do that, and if you win, if you accomplish that goal there on that one, you're going to have plenty of money to be able to go forward and sue that lawyer. If the lawyer was incompetent, if he didn't represent you, he or she didn't represent you properly, and didn't do his due diligence on your case. You know, and at that point, now remember, with that lack of due process, that case is overthrown. It's out. It's done. Okay? They can't even come, and you want them to cease and desist at the same time, so they can't even come back at you no more. So if they want to come back at you, they got to go into a real court, like the state Supreme Court. Not a county court, not an administrative court, but a state Supreme Court. And then they got to do battles, and you should be able to have your children back, of course, at that point, because once that case is overturned. Now again, remember, we're up against evil. We're up against people who are just so dug into what they're doing, they just don't want to let go of power, and it's hard for a lot of these people, let's say lawyers particularly as a whole, really. They have been so embedded with all of these lies concerning who we are as a people, that we're a democracy, we're under civil law, we come from Roman law, and, you know, all that stuff, and our country is created under Rome. I mean, all those things they truly believe, okay? So they were primed in lower school by either not learning anything or learning the lie. The longer back you go, it's mostly learning the lie. The closer you are to today, it's mostly you don't teach you anything. I mean, I've seen people ask who came out of college, have doctrines. Who was the first president of the United States? They couldn't answer that question. That's how seriously defunct the schools are. But in any event, lawyers have been brainwashed. They truly believe they spent $200,000, $250,000, whatever, to get their quote-unquote passed the law to be able to go get their bar license, quote-unquote, sort of license, what they call a license, which is no license at all. But in any event, they immediately shut you down, because in their brain they're saying, what a moron this guy is. He doesn't understand anything. I got an education. I spent $250,000 to get my education. This clown doesn't know nothing. He's saying things that's ridiculous. They won't even pay attention to you, okay? But that's the lawyers in general. If you're in a federal court, though, you can rest assured that judge understands everything. So whenever he does things that are against the law that injures you, he knows what he's doing, and he's guilty. Okay? And we're talking, again, in the federal courts particularly. But I think that's getting worse also, because I see some of the people that they've sent up to the Senate to be approved by the Senate to get him in to become a judge, and they get appointed, they get approved by the Senate. They're appointed by the President and then approved by the Senate. And I see some of these people, my goodness, the cases that they've heard are just ridiculous, and they have no background, no knowledge, terrible decisions, and yet some of them get through, especially when you have a Democratic-controlled Senate. They get through, you know, at least with the Republican-controlled Senate. They stop a lot of them. Like right now, a lot of them have been stopped, okay? But if you get a good judge, again, that's appointed, then they'll get them through. So there are problems in the court, and that's what we're working on. So hopefully we can solve this problem in months to a year. I don't know. We're working on it diligently. Okay, next question.
The next question is, can you discuss briefly the power of the county coroner? The purpose of my question is to see if possibly I could use the coroner in place of the sheriff to approach the grand jury in my case.
Well, you absolutely can. I don't know whether the coroner understands his power and authority, just like the sheriff doesn't understand his power and authority. But if you have a coroner that does understand the power of his and authority, he can go to the court and call to see the grand jury to, in order to try to pursue a an indictment. If the coroner is willing to be educated, get him the book, Government by Consent. I think that's probably the best book for an individual, generally for individuals, and no matter what they're doing, because it's going to give them a lot of knowledge on a lot of things. And then he or she might understand their power and have the guts to go up and do it. And it doesn't really take a lot of guts, because it simply is just going up to the court and just applying for, basically they'd say, when is the next grand jury meeting, and get me onto the docket for that, and that's it. There's nothing else to talk about. And they can't, they may try to reject that, again, if he's done, he or she has done their due diligence in understanding this, they can battle that and get that through. They have the power and the authority, because that's common law. But remember, it is under common law, and the Constitution does talk about the common law in a couple of places. So the Seventh Amendment, particularly, very powerful on the common law. Okay, and the preamble in itself is just dripping with common law. The word law, equity and law, which is the jurisdiction that the Supreme Court has, equity, of course, is legislative law under the rules of common law, okay? And that's why juries can nullify it. And then, of course, law in itself, the word law standing on its own, even though statutes are called law, it's not necessarily law at all. And again, remember, that brings it to a statutory court, which really makes a suggestion. When the court makes a decision, it's what they think. It's a suggestion, so to speak. But it does hold power until you challenge it and take it up the line. But, the word law is that which proceeds according to the common law. And in law, at law, or law. All right, next question.
Could you give me your current position on the Convention of States headed by Mark Meckler at Convention of States Action?
Yeah, that's an interesting situation that's going on. I'm very leery of that, but on the other hand, the way I see it worded, it looks pretty good. I was talking with Jan earlier about some of the cases. The questions are going to come up tonight, because he had one that was very long. And we discussed the fact that we can't take anything too long. But in that process, I did see this question. And so I did go to that website, and it's very interesting. Let me read it, what it is. This is for signing a petition to go forward with an Article 5 convention. And an Article 5 convention is really, It's a con, really, but they're limiting to what can be done. In other words, they're not looking to get any big discussions going and redebate things and adding things to the Constitution. They're just looking to insert a couple of things, and I think it's very powerful things that they're looking to try to insert. And it says basically this: I support the Convention of States, a national movement to call a convention under Article 5 of the United States Constitution. And this is what they're looking to do. Restricted means only to deal with these problems that they're going to be listing now. Restricted to proposing amendments that will, number one, impose fiscal restraints on the federal government. Number two, limit its power and jurisdiction. Number three, impose term limits on its officials and members of Congress. So those three points, I would agree 100%. My intention is to fill out this petition with my information and send it in. I think it's going to Donald Trump. Sign an open letter to. Okay, so it's an open going to Donald Trump. What they're trying to do is get Donald Trump to support it. And if Donald Trump supports it, and I'm sure he would, he will then pressure the Congress and the Senate to pass it. And the timing could be good, because I think we're going to be losing a lot of senators soon. We're going to be losing a lot of congressmen soon. We're going to be losing them, because I think a lot of them are going to go to jail. It's my very strong opinion. And then, of course, we've got the next election coming up.
Hey, John, a quick note. Fiscal restraints are already in the Constitution, so is limiting the power and the jurisdiction. There's nothing that these people are going to write that's going to make that happen. It's already in there. Now, the imposing of the term limits, that could be handled by us controlling the committee men. So all the things that we need to control, those things are already there. This, to me, is like a Trojan horse. I'm very opposed to this idea.
They're going in just for those three decisions. They could get it. But where in the Constitution do you think, I don't know if offhand, if you can point to something that helps to restrain them as far as their fiscal restraints? Because I think what they're really getting at, you know, is what DOGE is doing right now. I mean, they get all these, they call it pork, and they stick it in there, you know, this for that. And that's where a lot of this stuff comes from, I think. And they get away with it.
The imposing of the fiscal restraints is gold and silver. This fiat currency is not constitutional. So we could solve the problem just by going back to real money.
Well,
so
well that, I think what they're talking about here, though, is this idea of giving $1 million for condoms for the enemy or something. I mean, some ridiculous things like that. That, I think, is what they really mean. But I do agree we should look a little deeper into this. I don't see gold and silver on its own solving that particular problem because they waste so much money. That's the point. They have to refrain.
Well, those problems can be solved with, if you look at Madison's and Jackson's, and there was one more, and there might have been Monroe. They all rejected, and GR talks about this, they all rejected the Department of Transportation. They vetoed it. And the reasons why they vetoed it, that's all you need to stop all of this silly, silly nonsense. These things where they spend money on, it's called construction. You know what construction is they mm-hmm. take the law and they make something up and say, oh, this is what the law said, when it never said that. That's all they're doing. I am opposed entirely to a con. I think it's a Trojan horse. Why would they honor any new amendments when they don't honor any of the ones that exist now? It's absurd.
Well, that is true, and maybe in the long run, when we get rid of all of these individuals, maybe we can deal with the problem. Because you know, Trump is really setting a really good precedences anyway, because he's so open to the people. Everything he's doing is having discussions and everything. Openly, and he's constantly talking to the press, and the people are getting used to that. And as time goes on, you know, more and more people are going to get used to that and realize that. So when the next person comes in, they need to be doing the same thing. Otherwise, the people are going to get upset about it. You're right. We don't really need any of this because of the Committees of Safety, which is the true committee man. The problem is that people don't seem to want to stand up to take care of their business. They don't want to really have government by consent. They want to have someone else to take care of it. That's the problem. And
yes.
they will deny it. Most people say, oh, that's not true. Well, then let's go. Come to the Committee of Safety. Let's do something. Let's take back our schools. Let's take back our local government. Let's take back our congressmen. Let's push to get the senators to return back to the to the states.
I'm on the other side, John. I worked with the constitutional the committee. I can't even say the right COS. It's all
County Committee of Safety.
Convention of States.
Oh,
it's Article 5 of the Constitution. It's not a constitutional convention. It's every state that wants to have a convention of states has to put in a similar letter. Once they have at least 34 letters, Congress is required by the fifth article of the Constitution to put a date and a time and a place for a convention of states. Then the states are supposed to send one person, and there's some debate on what the rules are going to be there. But generally, the rules are looking for what they want is every state has one vote, and the idea is that with this one place, they can make amendments to the Constitution, and if 3/4 of the people there that are being represented, 3/4 of the state vote for that. It doesn't have to go through Congress. It just goes automatically out, and then states have to still ratify it themselves. The only question I see that I can't, that I haven't been able to nail down, is who determines what the rules are. They've had some convention tests. They've had trial convention of states, and they got the rules down, but I'm not sure Congress will let them have what they want. It still takes us standing up and saying that we want it to even get it, which is the same problem with committees of safety. So it has a ways to go. I think it's close to getting a committee of convention of states done so that they can propose amendments, but it still needs to get pushed over the line, just like everything else. I yield.
Okay, yeah, I think I agree with you on this, and there are 18 states that have already sent forth, passed a resolution on this, and there's these blue ones, these blue states, how many are there? 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 more states are in the process. They're active right now, going through to set forth legislation, so I think they're going to get it, so when you do the math on this. They have passed in one chamber, okay, three states, so they have to get the other chamber. There are two congresses in every state, you know, two legislators, so, you know, so they're working on it, and I think it's going to pass, so you're absolutely right. But let's look at this, since we're thinking about it. I never really looked too strong at this, and it does talk about two different ways to do this, so it appears. Let me read it. The Congress, whenever 2/3 of both houses shall deem it necessary, shall propose amendments to the Constitution, or this is the other side of things, which you're talking about, or on the application of the legislatures of 2/3 of the several states, shall call a convention for the proposed amendments, which in either case shall be valid to all intents and purposes as part of this Constitution, when ratified by the legislatures of 3/4 of the several states. So they have to have 3/4 of the states to get it approved. Or by convention in 3/4 thereof as the one or the other mode of ratification. And that's what you were talking about very specifically. May be proposed by the Congress, provided that no amendment which may be made prior to the year 1880 shall in any manner affect the first and fourth clause of the ninth section of the first article. We have to do some studying on this to get to this, what they're saying here, and that no state without its consent shall be deprived of its equal suffrage in the Senate. Now, therein is a major problem, because the Senate, they're deprived because they don't have anybody representing them in the Senate. But I don't think that really is going to make a difference if they do it this way. But again, I have to do research to be absolutely sure. It does make some other referrals to other things. So, but I do agree, you know, look at, if people would just step up and take care of their business and teach our children to do the same, you know, we can get this, but it'll be in the future. Because if we train up our children how they should walk in life, and then they become, you know, the time period when they run things at their age, you know, that's going to take quite a long time, you know, 40, 50 years, maybe 30 years. But if we give them a proper education, they will do it. Because a proper education will teach the children that they have something to give back, because they live in a nation with a constitution like we have, a common law constitution.
It's much more than just their vote. I'm sorry. Okay, you.
Yeah. All right. So anyway, the people can do it. You're absolutely right, because we can require it hey, you do the right thing or we're pulling you out of office. They can recall the people who are not doing the right thing. That's number one. Take control of the boards locally, you know, very, very easily. The town boards, the education boards, all of these different boards, we can control them very easily with a quo vanto. And then, of course, we can give them term limits by saying, nope, we're not going to support you this year. You've been in two times. We're looking for someone else. Forget about it. Take a hike. So we could do that. We don't need this. From Eric's perspective, he's right. We don't need it. But I don't think the people are educated enough or motivated enough, willing to give up time enough to do what has to be done. It's an uphill battle. I mean, we've been building on committees of safety for a very long time, and it's a very slow process. And people, I don't know, they just really don't step up. People need to step up. It's time, otherwise we lose. You can't have government by consent if you're not going to get involved. And we're not talking about getting into politics, because we have nothing to do with politics. Politics is destructive. We're only involved with the political process, okay, to put people in office, and if they don't do the right thing, to take people out. That's what we need to do. And that's what we teach here, and that's what you learn if you come up to our, go to our website and decide to become get a committee of safety going and become a committee man. You'd come under the start a committee of safety, just click on that button and follow the breadcrumb trail, so to speak, and you'll be led through the process and build a committee of safety. I'd like to talk a little more on this. Let's see if we have any more questions first. Any more questions, Dan?
We have one short one. It says, I keep hearing more alarming scare tactic propaganda about the rapidly approaching deadline for real ID. I hear more about travel restrictions and weaponization of real ID. To say that this is unconstitutional is an understatement. What can we the people do about this, and what is NLA's take on this?
Read that one more time, because I'm conflicted with this real ID business, but read it one more time.
Okay, I keep hearing more alarming scare tactic propaganda about the rapidly approaching deadline for real ID. I hear more about travel restrictions and weaponization of real ID. To say that this is unconstitutional is an understatement. What can the people do about this, and what is NLA's take on this?
Well, that's a good question, because I really don't know how they define a real ID, okay? You know, you go to motor vehicles and you can get a driver's license and or just an ID, a non-driver's license. Unfortunately, they charge us. They shouldn't charge us a penny. But in any event, they give you an ID that's it's valid. It's a valid ID. Now, they had something, and I think they called it a real ID, too. I forget what they called it, and all that was pay a few extra bucks, you know, which was kind of weird. I don't know what the definition of a real ID is, so I really can't answer that. Does anybody know?
A national ID, there are certain things that are on some states' driver's licenses, and different things are on different states, and they're trying to consolidate that. I really don't understand why a real ID is a threat, except, you know, they already have your Social Security number if they want to use it. So
maybe a real ID has a chip in it, which goes to a further identification in the sense of, you know, exactly that, a Social Security number inside there, maybe a driver's license, a birth certificate. Not that all those things are lawful, but we've been living under that all our lives, and they've been around for a long time. And if we're going to decide to try to do something else, we do have to find a way for people to identify themselves.
I think it's an ID. Yeah. There's a stripe and a barcode on the back, and I think it's an attempt to standardize all driver's license in every state.
That's probably.
But it isn't a driver's license. And it has quite strict requirements to get it. I think there's like five. You have to have a birth certificate and all this stuff, two photo IDs and this and that, and so on. And I don't believe your passport is one of the things you can use for an ID. So it takes a little scurrying around to get all that information together, and then you go down and you get your real ID. But that's just for identification. It doesn't do anything else for you.
And isn't it going to restrict state-to-state flights for people in the next few months? So if you don't have it, you won't be able to fly. Isn't that part of it?
Well, that'd be really horrible if that's the case. You know?
Well, that's what I've heard. I mean, the concern for me would be it's a greater concentration, it's greater control over everybody, and you could easily tie it into a social credit score system. It just seems like another step into making that.
It does get a little dangerous. I mean, the Social Security number is one thing. It's a problem. And as a matter of fact, when Social Security numbers, when they started to apply them, there was an uproar concerning that information and that Social Security. It's actually against the law for anybody to ask you for your Social Security number. You know, when you go to a doctor's office, for instance, and, you know, these lawyers, they play all these stupid games. You go to a doctor's office and you go for the first time and you fill out the paperwork and they want to get your Social Security number. I never put it in. I had a point where they're telling me we can't see it. I made an argument. And you know, they've taken all these medical businesses and brought them together in large groups, and it's run by lawyers. The lawyers have a piece of the action, I guess, or whatever's going on. But they had to. They went up to talk to legal department, or they made the phone call, and they came back and said, "Okay, we do have to accept it without it." You know, who are these people to require that? Because it's dangerous. Your Social Security out there in the hands of all these people, just to begin with. Okay.
If I may, John. I'm on the Real ID deadline, May 7, 2025, and the first question is, what is a Real ID? It's passed by Congress in 2005, the Real ID Act, and enacted the 9/11 Commission's recommendation that the federal government, quote, set standards for the issuance of sources of identification, such as driver's licenses, unquote. The Act established minimum security standards for state-issued driver's license and identification cards, and prohibits certain federal agencies from accepting for official purposes license and identification cards from states that do not meet these standards. These purposes are accessing certain federal facilities, boarding federal regulated commercial aircraft, entering nuclear power plants.
Well, how many people do you, or anybody else that's listening, how many people do you know that has that Real ID?
Well, I'm kind of thinking that some states are already on board and they've issued a Real ID. I'm trying to figure out how to identify that I have a Real ID or I don't.
Georgia's already done it.
A lot of them have been issuing it for some time. Pennsylvania's
got that star.
You know that are doing it. How many people? You know, I think the people have nullified it by just not acting. I mean, I don't have one. I don't know anybody that I've
spoken. I'm not going to get one either.
Yeah, I mean, most people, you know, that I know, you know, generally speaking, in the real world, so to speak, you know, they're not even thinking on those terms, so they don't have them.
Okay, here we go.
And because nobody will be able to fly, nobody will be able to enter a government building, nobody will be able to vote, nobody will be able to do anything.
How do I know if my license or identification card is Real ID compliant? Real ID compliant cards will have one of the following markings on the upper top portion of the card. If the card does not have one of these markings, it is not a Real ID compliant and won't be accepted as proof of identity in order to board commercial aircraft. And it has a gold star, a black star, a circular white star in a gold circle, and a white star in a black circle, and a bear with a small white star on its back.
To be in the top right side, you said, or something?
Yeah, top right hand corner. And my state already has that. I already have one of them. I didn't know what it was. But pay attention to what Terry was reading, the definition. It's these federal agencies. I guarantee you they're unconstitutional, and they're going about it.
Right to travel to begin with.
Exactly. So it's just more of a lockdown. It's dangerous, and I yield.
Yeah, we will track old travel.
Yeah, we will track you.
You can still use your passport, even if you don't have a Real ID, and get on that airplane.
No, they said no on that. Didn't they say no on that, Terry? Passport?
Yeah, it sounded like they were going to start enforcing it on May 7, 2025.
Right.
Well, I don't think enough people applied for it because nobody's going to fly.
Yep.
Federal agencies, including DHS and TSA, may only accept state-issued driver's license and identification cards as identification for purposes of accessing federal facilities, including TSA airport security checkpoints. If the
What about federal courts? Do they list federal courts in there?
No.
Does it say federal buildings or as generic or no?
Yeah, federal facilities is how they put it, including TSA airport security checkpoints. I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
I wonder if a court would be a federal facility.
A federal court, maybe.
Because if you have a federal case, you can't go into court.
Yeah. They have it all set up as to where you'll be able to go with that real ID.
Right. But they don't even want you to leave your town.
Yeah, I don't see they delayed it by, what was it, a year, at least a year or so ago, because nobody got them. And I don't think it's going to be that much better now, you know,
if nobody gets,
you know.
Yeah, I think it's nullified.
Nullification by not doing it.
That's it. Okay, that's it with the questions?
Yeah, we just had that real long one, John, which will need to be submitted, shortened and resubmitted next week.
Yeah. Okay. Committee to Safety, I'd like to talk a little bit before we go into the queue. Anybody who wants to get into the queue, it's a *6 and a 1 if you're on a phone, and if you're on an app or a browser, there should be a button there to click. So we got a few people in the queue right now. But let me just cover a couple of things really, really quick if I can. At least I try to do it quick. I guess it's the Committee of Safety. Look at people are building committees of safety. Some people are not being educated. It's a wrongdoing to go out and do a committee of safety and not get educated. People are reinventing the wheel. But why are they doing that? Our founding fathers had set the standards, so let's follow the founding fathers' standards. That's what we have here. And you have to have a proper education. If a people expect to be ignorant and free, forget about it. Jefferson said you expect what never was and never will be. It's not going to happen. And all the people are going to do is create chaos. There are some people out there creating committees of safety, and then they go out and they jump into doing the grand juries. I mean, what are they doing here? You know, we're not teaching people to do that at this moment. We're teaching people to be administrators to the grand jury. You know, we have the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, which was agreed by every grand jury that was established for this purpose in every state, to initiate the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury to deal with enemies, particularly domestic, but foreign and domestic. And that's what we've been doing. And but we're properly educated. I mean, we're not perfect. We all still have a lot to learn. And but nevertheless, we have the principles down. We have, the idea of operating with a sense of honor, justice, and mercy. You know, these things have to be in the heart and the minds of the individuals that are going out and making accusations to accuse someone. And they have to do things seriously, and they're not out of anger. You know, a lot of people, they want to, we need a grand jury, I got a problem, and they think in their own case. Forget about that. No, we need to do this properly. So I'm speaking to those who are out there that are not following the process that we've put forward. Because I tell you, once we get things established, if we do get word that individuals are doing it improperly, we're going to remove them from our directory, and hopefully another person will step in. We'll only know by another person making the complaint and hopefully convincing that person to take control of the committee, and we wipe the name off of one person and put another one on in order for people to do it properly. Now, I want to make a point here at the same time. People are free and independent to do whatever they want. National Liberty Alliance is not going to, nor does it have a desire to control anyone. But doing wrongdoings that affect what we are doing as a whole could be damaging to us as a whole. And they, you know, who knows, they may break the law and then they come out after people on the national side of things. We don't want to get lost in that kind of thing. So people should follow the process and get properly educated. You know, I'm excited to get things done quickly. I have a Committee of Safety meeting tomorrow. And it's moving very slow, and I'd like to move it quicker, but it's not going to move quick. It's going to move whatever speed it happens in. You know, it's going to take months before we can connect with our sheriff. We have to educate our sheriff. It's going to take months before we then can start to prepare to go and visit the school districts. It might be 6 or 8 months down the road before we can go to our first board meeting, you know, for the schools. And we got, I think it was 19 school districts here in my county, so we've got 19 places to go to. But if we don't do it properly, we're not going to succeed, okay? So people have the liberty and the freedom to do whatever they want in their committees of safety because every county is different, even in the same state, county to county. They might have some, well, they do. Each county has their own unique problems, but we also have the same problems that we all share, like dealing with maybe our congressmen, okay, dealing with our school districts. You know, so we have a lot that we can share and we can work with. But it's what's important, though, is the structure. The structure of your committee of safety and the way you proceed. That is the important thing. And people that are trying to reinvent that wheel is just causing problems because then we're not interconnected with other counties that are doing the same thing. It's more difficult to work with each one. Now, again, you know, we put forth ideas for people so that they can come together and, you know, put the necessary paperwork together. They need to do a charter. They need to do a resolution. And we've written those two things already for people to work, but it's a baseline. It's not the, you know, people can change things in that. Definitely going to add things, there's no doubt about it. We just put a framework up together. And as the Committee of Safety matures and gets more understandings and see more problems and situations, things they need to focus in on, they're going to start adding things to their resolutions. They're going to add things to their charter. And that's the way it goes. That's what we have to do. So NLA is not trying to restrict anyone. But we have to have a structure that we can all work with together so every county can work together and, you know, jump in the gun to go right to a grand jury and especially going out in anger and not with a sense of honor, justice, and mercy, and not understanding the law properly enough. Also, all this is a problem, a major problem. So people need to really, you know, work on working together and following the guidelines that we put together to the best that they can and make your alterations accordingly as each of the people, you know, groups decide to make that. Again, being free and independent. We're not going to give anyone marching orders. We're not going to tell anybody what to do. But we put the plan out there. We put the program out there because people have not been educated. If people were educated properly, well, they wouldn't be jumping the gun to go do this because they'd be young in school being educated on the process. When they get out of school, they'll be able to go right out and do it. They'll understand this whole process if they're given a proper education. And that's another thing we're working on. And again, without funds, we're not going to be able to do it. So hopefully we'll get funds and we will do it and write the necessary textbooks from K to 12 and get what we need in that. And I'm talking particularly on law, the Constitution, on civics, you know, the responsibilities, teaching children to have confidence in themselves. That's all part of this process, by the way. Common law does that. Just by having common, just by getting into the common law, which ultimately is the Bible, okay, just by getting into that, okay, will develop confidence. And that's what we have to instill in our children, confidence and morals, okay? And the fact that they owe it back to the country we live in because we have a constitution, they owe it back to participate in government by consent. All right, hopefully the people who are going to story will listen in on that and start doing the right thing, okay? And one other thing, people who are running for office, they cannot take a seat as a chairperson or even as a treasurer or a treasurer or secretary, okay? They can do that to get it started, but they need to yield a seat as soon as they get someone else to fit it. Sit in it. But if they're planning on running for office and get the support of that particular, you know, committee of safety, they shouldn't be sitting in any of those seats. Not that that seat has any more power than anyone else, okay, because just think about it. You know, the chairman doesn't get to decide what comes on the floor or what doesn't come on the floor. He doesn't have any more power or authority than anyone else. Got only one vote, just like everyone else, and you can replace the chairman by popular vote at any time. Okay, and that's true with the co-chair also. You know, you look at the way Congress is running the chairman; they run so much power and authority over everyone else. It's like a dictatorship. They keep things from coming onto the floor for discussion. Nothing should stop anything from coming onto the floor for discussion. So I think we were very clear when we put the handbooks together for all of this information. And people need to know and understand this. And without this knowledge, they're just going to cause chaos and other problems. And you'll find people who will try to come in and take power and start to assert some authority to that seat as if it has any more authority than any other one of the members. It doesn't. And we got to remember that. And when someone tries to execute that, then it's time to maybe we need a new chairman, you know? So anyway, I wanted to make that statement because I'm hearing things, and it's not a lot, but it could be more than I realize. You know, you hear one or two things, you wonder how often is this problem? Well, I hope we can correct it. I hope the people that are, causing these problems will have a different heart and start to get educated. Or the people that are listening in and realizing that the Committee of Safety is going astray, let's bring it back on course. Let's get done what we got to get done. Okay, with that, we're going to go to questions. Let me just say real quick, I don't know how many committees of safety we have going at the moment. We do keep a number up here on the website down. It used to be up high, but we got so much stuff up here. Let's see, committees of safety in process. Total county committees of safety in process. We have 200. We have 3,134, 33 counties. But that's okay. 200 isn't bad. If we can hit critical mass, that'll grow real quick. And, of course, we're always looking for that. But anyway, let's simply put it this way. Everybody needs to do what they're doing with a sense of honor, justice, and mercy. And you can't do that properly if you're not educated. You have to know the basics. Okay? You have to know the Constitution. And how do you know anybody's breaking the law? How do you know if anyone's, is not doing their job correctly and not, honoring the oath unless you know the Constitution to be able to actually see it? Because people don't see it. They talk off the top of their head of what they think they know. And I've heard this said before, and I've said it myself. It's not what that you don't know that hurts you. It's that what you think you know, and it's not so. It's going to destroy you. So let's keep in mind, let's get educated, especially people who are trying to do the right thing by getting committees of safety going, run for office, and so on and so forth. And anybody running for office, they have to be required to take the course that we put out, unless they have another place they can take the course and prove to us it's a good Jeffersonian course, let's say, the common law. But you shouldn't support anyone that's running for office that's not taking the course. And this course is free to sheriffs and deputies. Okay? We let them in for free. All right, anyway, let me get off my soapbox. We'll go to the questions here. Let's see. Okay, we're going to take our first person. Asula, what is that? Missouri, I think, right?
Yes.
Good evening. Good evening.
Yes, John, I have a couple of questions about the building that we're in, that we have a business running through the building that we have right now. They offer us to purchase, and it used to be a gas station, but they want $200,000 for, but those pumps in the front still need to be removed. And so my question is, they're only giving us until June to purchase or move the business. Is that lawful for them to do that?
Well, I don't think I'm really understanding your question. Maybe there's some information you didn't give me. You said you're looking to purchase the property?
Yes. They're giving us, they want us to purchase.
What kind of business is it that you've got that you want to run?
Automotive business. My husband's automotive business is in it. It's been here for almost 4 years, and so they want us to purchase the building for $200,000.
And is that what you want to do, or you don't want to do it?
We do like the building, and we do want to make an offer, but I think 200 is very steep because gas, the bump is still in the front, and I know regulations not going to be, and we are not going to be able to purchase with those in the front like that.
So you don't want to, even though it's an automotive business, you don't want to deal with pumping gas or any of that, right?
There's no gas. The gas hasn't been having any gas for a long time, so.
Yeah, well, removing the pumps shouldn't be a big thing as long as the tanks are empty. I don't know that they should require anything more than getting, and you'd probably want to remove the pumps anyway, so. But I don't see that as a big problem, but you're talking about the price, and I don't know anything about that and the market that you live in. I don't have knowledge to give advice in that area anyway.
Okay, what do you think about the DNR regulations, within the state? DNR is the Department of Natural Resource. I think they don't want to do the inspection for a gas station, make sure there's nothing leak into the water.
Yeah, I think that's appropriate. That's an environmental concern. I think that's an appropriate thing. So I don't know. Are you thinking there might be a problem with that? I mean, I know they'll probably charge an arm and a leg, maybe. I don't know. Maybe that's a problem.
Yeah, that's why I wanted to find out if, I know the price is very steep, but they sell as it is. That's what they told us. We haven't agreed to anything. So my husband and I talk about we're going to make an offer. So that offer will be including the certified inspection from the DNR.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the inspection is
one thing, there are requirements, and how you do it, is another thing. I'll give you an idea of something that happened with me from a contractor's perspective that might help be helpful, and maybe you can apply the same kind of a thing here. Yeah, because the expense would really be in preparing and doing all the things and that needs to be done in order to pass the inspection. And so you have to get a private company that does that. Is that the point?
I think the state does the, they have the DNR office in the main area where, it's about 2 hours away, but they don't want to have to do the inspection. But I heard they charge like over $100,000, something like that, to, just to come out and do that inspection and make sure that they do testing.
How much? How much did you say?
Yeah, they say over $100,000.
Oh, that's ridiculous. Yeah.
Yes.
That's absurd. I have no idea how they can. Well, the state, they can get away with anything they want. They don't care about. So
you don't think that it's too it's not enough time for us to purchase.
Yeah, well, again, I don't know your finances. I don't know the situation. I don't know how important the location is, and so many different things I don't know. But it is for me. I wouldn't give anyone $100,000. I would look for another piece of property. That's what I would do.
Well, okay.
That's my thought. I don't know if this is helpful. There might be a get around, but you see, the problem is with the inspection. Now you have to pay some company that's got to be coming in that's certified in order to do the job, correct?
That's why my next question would be because we wanted to make an offer, and should we seek a lawyer to help us with the right offer and including all the stipulations that we expect to. For them to consider.
Well, I hate to tell people to go get a lawyer, but
or should I just do an affidavit?
Oh no, when it comes to the commercial side of things, okay. Though, if you can find a person who's reasonable, come in and charge you maybe $500 to $1,000 to do the job, because you don't want to let them get carried away. When it comes to looking at statutes and dealing with government agencies and different things like that, this is where lawyers are really, that's where their expertise should be. And they, that would be good for that, I would think. But you want to get a solid price. But here's a thought and an idea, but I don't know if it's going to work on this and if you're going to apply it on this. I had a situation where I wanted to do a job in a particular city. And they told me, well, you know, I had to use their people in there. And they allowed me to come into the city to do the job, even though I wasn't, quote unquote, licensed, okay? They wanted me to get a license, but they didn't really force it on me, but they wanted all the subs, you know, the electricians, the plumbers. They didn't want me to do it in-house, okay, because I did everything in-house. Well, a few things I didn't. Electrical I didn't, and certain plumbing I didn't. But anyway, I had a friend that came over. He was had a license in another city close by, and he came into that city, and they allowed him to come in with his license to work. So he had to go to the meetings, and at the meetings, and when after he went to the meetings, he said, John, they discussed your job there. He said, they're figuring out who's going to get that job. They were doing, what is it called, collusion. They were doing collusion at their meetings. I mean, this is how crooked it gets when you get licenses and things like that. So I talked with a friend of mine. He's an architect, and he was doing some of my work. He said, look, I'll take care of this. Just hire me. I'll go in, and I'll take care of the
city. There you go, yeah.
So he came in and told the inspectors, no need to come out to deal with this problem. I'm on the side. I'm going to certify everything. I'll give all my certification to you at the end of the job or as we go on. And because, you know, he's above any kind of an inspector, you know, he's an architect. And I went in, did the job, and I didn't have to hire. They don't know who I hired and wasn't on their business. And I hired my regular guys from outside, electrician and plumber, and did all my work in-house. I did some plumbing in-house. And then he signed everything off, and the job got done, and I went on my way. So, I mean, something like that maybe, you know, you can figure a roundabout. But I think the property is probably not worth doing that. I think you're going to sink too much money. But that's my thoughts. I don't know your economic system. I don't know the location, the importance of that location. You know, when it comes to
it's
business.
It's in a main location. It's in a main location right by the highway.
Okay, well, that's the key. The key to any kind of a location, especially with commercial property, is location. Location, you know the ones. So that's the best I can tell you.
So you don't think I should just do the affidavit on what we just talked about?
Well, if you want to put that kind of money up and you want to, and it's that important for the location, then you have to figure that out, whether you're going to get a good return on that in a reasonably good time on your investment. Well, I just don't know. So,
okay.
You know.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
It.
All right. Take our next caller. Our next caller is Anonymous. Hello, Anonymous. Give us your state, though, Anonymous. Let me click the button. Hang on. Okay. You got the mic. What's your state, Anonymous?
Hi. Farid here. How are you, John?
Good.
Thank you so much for all that you do. I have a comment. Maybe you can shed some light.
All right. Well, what state are you from, though?
California, Northern California.
California. Oh, my goodness. Almost as bad as New York, or vice versa.
Almost as corrupt as New York.
Yes.
So Article 3, Section 1 says that the judicial power of the United States shall vest in one Supreme Court and in all other courts that have been ordained and established under the Congress. But the problem that I have is that even though Article 6, Section 1 of California Constitution says that, just like you said, these courts are, state courts are courts of records, but none of them have been ordained and established. So to me, all their orders are void ab initio. But the issue is that, you know, the sheriff and the others are so ignorant of this that to enforce it is a challenge. So I'm looking forward to hearing your thoughts on this subject.
Well, look, there was something I recently realized. It's kind of an epiphany to me, and even though it's simple once I explain it, but it just didn't connect with me. You know, these judges are, let me see what they call them, ALJs, okay? Administrative Law Judges. First word is the killer right there, administrative. They're administrative law judges, which brings them to ultimately not an absolute conclusion in their case, because although it has to be acknowledged and preceded by, but it's appealable. Okay, so it could be appealed up the level. So if you in a court case and you have a judge ruling in that court case, then it's an administrative hearing. You're not getting due process. Okay, that's number one. So, but the court, it's the United States Constitution, and I know New York State Constitution, and numerous other constitutions, other state constitutions that I've looked into concerning finding a court of record. Okay, maybe there are states that don't have something like that in their constitution. Probably the latter states, like maybe Alaska and Hawaii, and some other states that came in late. Maybe they don't have anything where they say in the Constitution, everybody should check the Constitution, by the way, and I'd be interested in hearing maybe next week if anybody checks the Constitution to let me know, hey, I'm in this state, and yeah, they do mention a court of record, or I'm in that state, and they don't use the word court of record. Now, a court of record, when the Supreme Court was put together, it's under law and equity. Law is the common law, and equity, of course, is legislative law. And every, for instance, in New York State, it says that New York State courts are courts of record, but they're also administrative courts. So how can you tell the difference? Well, sometimes it's hard, but generally speaking, an administrative court is run by a judge, and the judge makes the decision. A court of record is run by the people, and they make the decision. The problem with that one, though, is they hijack the juries, and all too often behind the scenes they're really controlling the juries, generally by requiring them to adhere to statutes. And once they adhere to statutes, they're no longer a court of record. They're not free and independent. So therein is the problem, and that is going on in every state, I believe, that there is a problem with that situation. So I don't know if that helps.
I believe that any and all orders are void. Like President Trump has the resources to challenge them based on this. Well, average guys such as myself and probably most other people, they just don't listen to us. But the president, I believe, has the resources, and based on that, all the orders against him are void.
Well, we've sent some information to Trump on that, and I think he knows this, what I'm going to say, and I think he's allowing this to happen because he's really letting them really destroy themselves. He wants the people to see this, so he's allowing some of these things to happen, I think, because he doesn't even have to listen to them. You know, these people that are complaining and yelling and screaming, they're lawless people. And, you know, they never said anything about Biden. Biden constantly ignored the courts. He did whatever hell he pleased. And these people, you know, they have no respect for the law. They go out and do whatever they want. If Trump tries to do something, already saying, well, he's not obeying the law. He's not obeying. He's a tyrant, and he's this, that, and the other thing, you know. But, you know, the bottom line is, in one of the papers I sent to Trump, I made the note, and again, I think he knows this, is nullify them, ignore them, period. Look, he's got the administrative power, they got the judicial power, but they're nobody, or these lower court judges, they're nobody. You know, you really got to, anybody that tried to make a conclusion or a decision on this has to be up at least on the appellate level, or and especially on the United States Supreme Court level. I mean, he could have moved this to the Supreme Court very quickly, okay, call it an emergency, and he hasn't done that. I know they know that. Bush did that. Okay, and he went through, I think, Scalia, and Scalia pushed for the court. We got to hear this case, you know. So he could have done that, but he didn't. All right, but these judges on the lower levels—they're nobody. Who the heck do they think they are to try to tell the president what he can do and what he can't do? Especially what is clear in his powers. It's written up in the legislation. He's Article 3, I believe it is, for the president. And, in fact, let me just take a quick look. I think I have it here. Yeah, the president is USC Title III. It's about 1,000 pages, I think, if I recall. And, You know, that's where a lot of his powers and authorities are all written up in there. And clearly he has, and what do these other sides say? They say, oh, he's resting on an old law going all the way back to the beginning of our nation. Oh, my goodness, that's terrible. That's the purest you can get, going back to the founding fathers, you know? So yeah. He could nullify them. Nullification is the true thing. Jefferson set the stage. He wrote a paper concerning the nullification. I forget the name of the paper, but nullification is the proper course, and that's what he did when he had problems with the judges. He nullified them by ignoring them. I'm the president. You can't do nothing about it. And he moved on with his powers and authority. And it's kind of what I suggested for Trump to do. And like I said, I think they already know this.
Yeah. Thank you
so much. Yeah, one of his people, one of the people, I don't know who it was in the administration, who mentioned something about nullification. So I think they already know.
Yeah. All right. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you. Okay, we'll take our next caller. Ross, how you doing? You got the mic.
Hey, John. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Loud and clear.
I disagree with the idea of term limits for congressmen and congressmen specifically. Only one reason I find President put term limits on them is because it's we the people should have had oversight over what congressmen were doing. Then if we didn't like them in office for the 2 years, we just need to call them back.
Mm-hmm. Well, look, I kind of agree to some degree with that. But the problem is, I totally agree with that, as a matter of fact. The problem is what I mentioned earlier, people aren't stepping up to do what has to be done in order to exercise that government by consent. And then we have control over that. And it's very easy to get rid of someone in office you don't want there. You just do a recall, 90 days, they're out of there. Even an indictment, potentially speaking, can shut them down. Although I'm seeing things that is contradictive to that, but an indictment should be a problem for someone that's in office. Although they're not proven guilty yet, so I guess that's controversial. But definitely a recall can be done to get rid of someone. Our founding fathers did not intend on people to make a living out of running government. They intended for people to come in. And remember, our founding fathers, generally speaking, not necessarily all of them, but many of them, were businessmen. Many of them were lawyers, too. And they were not bar attorneys. They did not belong to the bar. The word bar, we know, has its own meaning coming out of England. But the B-A-R, which is a capital B and a little A-R, that identified with the rail that separates the court from the people. And to cross the bar brings you into the process of dealing with the case. And in order to become a bar attorney, in other words, a bar lawyer, without the British accredited registry involved, without that, you had to be schooled, or not schooled, but tested by your peers. And, anybody who's gotten a book, The Real Thomas Jefferson, I think it's in there, but there are a few places where he was, he went in to become, matter of fact, I know they remember in the book, they read about it, The Real Thomas Jefferson, a great book. When he was tested by the bar, which means his peers, to be approved to practice law, so he went and they asked him questions and he answered those questions and then they voted, yeah, hey, this guy's qualified to carry the name as a lawyer. Also, there's a thing on Lincoln, the same thing with him. Him had taken the test. Not for the British accredited registry, no, not for that. And that's the game they play, because you have the word bar on the one hand and then they polluted that word with the acronym bar. And, they do this with everything, they take on the word citizen and make it something that's problematic by changing the meaning of it. When the U.S. Constitution uses the word citizen 7 times in it, there's nothing wrong with that word, but they polluted it, okay? And this is what they do. But anyway, Our founding fathers were businessmen. They were, running large farms or whatever, inventors, lawyers, and these are the people that came in and volunteered for a period of time to run an office. And that's why Trump is so qualified, because he's got the experience of business. You know, he's not making his money sucking off the government, you know, by becoming an elected official and then playing games with dishonest ways of making money on the market or whatever the case may be. He's uniquely qualified to do the job he's doing, no doubt about that. I don't know of anyone else potentially capable of doing what he's doing. But once he takes care of the deep state, and that's gone, any good businessman would be the right guy for the president. We don't want a politician in there. We want someone who is a statesman, who has experience controlling something big, you know, like a business. So, anyway.
Yeah, that's the... I hear a lot of things people say about, we need statesmen, and some elected officials say, oh, I'm a statesman, and no, they put their interests before the people's interests.
That's right.
That's the statesman's job, is to put other people's interests before theirs.
Well, exactly. It's to lift up, the purpose of our nation and empower the people. And that's what Trump is doing. The problem is people don't know how to take that power. That is the big, big problem. And they need to learn, because they never learned in school. And this is on purpose. They purposely did not teach this. I mean, I'm sure people see this on YouTube, but these people go out and ask them questions. I mentioned earlier about this college student who didn't know who the first president of the United States was. That is appalling. They put up a map, and they asked them to find the United States, and they couldn't even find the United States on a map. I mean, that's how seriously defunct, and how long it's been defunct, our education. Because these are college students. That means for at least the past 12 plus 4 years, or 2 years, depending on how long they went to college, but at least the last 14, 15 years, they haven't been teaching our children anything worthwhile, anything. And you know, the best education out there so far is either... And I don't know how much really the private schools are teaching well either, as far as civics is concerned, and the Constitution. And none of them teach the law, but the best education, in my opinion, is homeschooling. So, but in any event. Okay, Ross, yes. Anything else?
No, that's it.
Okay, thank you. Okay, we'll take our next caller here. Michael K., what state are you from? You got the mic.
Yep. Hello. Hey, I just have a quick question. I'm new to all this. This is all new to me. I have a court hearing tomorrow. I got a speeding ticket, and from what I understand, I'm in Arkansas. It's at the county district court, but from what I understand, they can give me up to a $500 fine and up to 30 days in jail. Now, can
really?
They put me in
30
yeah.
days in jail?
Yeah. Can they put me in jail while I file an appeal?
Who said this?
I talked to an attorney about it, and apparently the judge that I'm going in front of, I guess he's just, pretty strict on stuff, and I have a clean driving record.
I can't give you any information, because you might get yourself in bigger trouble, you know? I mean, look at a couple of things. You'll have to judge this, whether you just want to go in and plead guilty. A lot of times you talk with the cop and then reduce things. And how fast were you going above the speeding?
I was doing 80 and a 55, which I was following behind another truck.
I got hit with a speeding ticket at close to that speed, too, 55. But in any event, look, if you really want to fight it, it could be problematic, because, it depends on how they respond to it. Is you challenge the jurisdiction? They don't have the jurisdiction. There's so much about this, because it's traffic court to begin with. So it brings you into commercial. You're not operating commercially, okay?
No.
But in order to do this, when is your court hearing?
It is tomorrow.
You have time to do anything. You have to get an education. Only if you can put it off, and maybe in a month you can prepare for this and come in properly. Or go in and plead guilty and then sue them if you want later for denial of due process. And, you know, taking, you know, all, goodness, your Fifth Amendment to begin with, you know. They've taken your property without the due process. You know, we do have it. If you want to go out and learn more about this, you can go. You're looking at your screen here? You're following me on the desktop?
Yeah.
Okay. Education starts here. Come down to law, okay, and then come down to court forms and process, okay? Now, we cover this in our course also, but I put this up here for people who have a problem in the court and they want to learn. The best place to learn is in traffic court, but based in jail, my goodness, that's crazy. Let's see. You come down to instructions to, and forms for traffic court, okay? You have to come in and file with a file on demand on the front page because they'll reject your papers, but you put the file on demand on it, and that becomes part of your evidence later on because they're gonna destroy your paperwork, send it back, ignore it, or bury it, whatever they want. But that's just another problem for more money you can sue for later. Then you come in, you have to do an appearance ticket as if you were a lawyer. You come in with an appearance ticket, a notice of motion, and a verified jurisdictional challenge. And that's the basic you got to go in with. And so they got to now hear it. When jurisdiction is challenged, it must be decided. That's the key. It has to be decided. Now jurisdiction is required by law to be on the top of all the paperwork. So they should tell you what the jurisdiction is, but they're not going to because it's a commercial jurisdiction. And so you're forcing them to do that. Now, what you're going to get, what a lot of judges will do, is they're going to say, okay, I just decided I have jurisdiction. Let's move on and stop the nonsense. That's what he's going to do or say. But your position on that has got to be, well, I don't know how that could be. I'm the only one with a paper in the court. And in court, what's required is you can rule on the papers. You can't take outside things on this. I got papers in affidavit form sworn to, unrebutted, and the prosecutor has not rebutted this. So that's what rules the court. You need to rule for me. But besides that, you know, and again, this is going to get you in trouble possibly, you know, you're biased, okay? And so really someone else has to make this decision. Now, in any event, I don't know that I pushed that part of it, but if you're really bold and want to take the chance, at that point, they're going to ignore you. They're going to set you for trial. And that's when you got to go to state court and move the case to your state court for cause, or even right into the federal court for denial of due process. And okay. So those are the two ways you could do it. But again, you have to have some knowledge to do this. We have the paperwork for it. But again, I don't want to get you in trouble.
Yeah, no, I'm a new member. I just, I got some information. My brother actually led me onto your site and everything like that. But
you're not going in there with the man on the land stuff, though, whatever you do. You know what I'm talking about when I say about the man on the land?
No.
Or they come in and really make a debate. I don't want to get into it at the moment. But generally, we teach common law. Common law will get you out of everything because that's the real law. And that's what all these papers are written up on, common law. And of course, you know, we agree with the great United States Supreme Court rulings, Marbury versus Madison. What a great decision, very powerful. You know, anything that's repugnant to the common law or to the Constitution is null and void. It's as if it never existed. American jurisprudence also covers it also. That's a collection of decisions of the common of the Supreme Courts. Mostly. You have United States versus Madison, another powerful case. These are the things that you want to use in court, you know?
Yeah, so basically, I had a hearing. The cop didn't show up. The judge asked me if I was pleading guilty or not guilty. I told him, well, I mean, I'm guilty of speeding, but I was falling behind another vehicle.
Only if you had knowledge. What he was trying to tell you is the case could have been thrown out. If that judge, if that guy didn't show up for the trial, would you say, I want a dismissal? That's what he's trying to ask you at that point in time. He was really trying to do something for you, but he can't tell you what to do. But I do think the judge was trying to tell you something.
Well, I didn't know the cop didn't show up at the time. Afterwards, I found out the cop didn't show up. He scheduled it for a trial because he put me in as not guilty, set it up for a trial. That was scheduled for like December 23rd. I went down there on the 23rd, and the DA said that the cop didn't show up, and he got the judge to do a continuance. And there was already a continuance.
How long ago did that happen?
That was December 23rd.
You can go in and say to the court, or you can even, well, you go into court tomorrow, you can say, look, I'm totally ignorant of what's going on, but I'm trying to figure things out. I know this was back in December, and you had a court, court hearing to go forward with this case, and the cop didn't show up, and I didn't have enough knowledge to object to what the prosecutor said. I object to that, and I think this case needs to be dismissed because it defaulted by not coming. You lost your witness.
That was the second time.
Well, again, that's even more powerful. And you could say this is twice, okay? So you could try that tomorrow and see once where that goes with, you know?
Okay. No, I should be able to appeal it when he finds me guilty.
Of course, yes. Yeah, you can appeal it. But again, it's harder to go up the appeal for a denial of due process, after you didn't do these other things like come in with an appearance ticket, set forth to verify jurisdictional challenge, those two particular with a notice of motion also, which goes to the prosecutor. But on the other hand, in law, okay, if you are unaware of it and you're discovering it later, not being a lawyer, that should be able to be resurrected. Because justice is what the courts are not here to apply the law. The courts are here to apply justice. Okay? Again, good luck with it. Hopefully, try seeing if you can object to the two times that he didn't show up, that you were ignorant to the fact that you could have objected. You didn't know because you're not a lawyer, but someone told you this, that since they didn't show up, that's a reason to dismiss the case. And this happened twice, so I want to place an objection in the court right now and move the court for dismissal. Try that and see what happens. I mean, the worst thing he's going to say, forget about it. We're going forward. I mean, whatever, But who knows? What was the words the judge said to you?
The first judge, he asked me, if I wanted to plead guilty or not guilty. And I told him, well, I'm guilty of speeding, but I was falling behind another vehicle.
But he said something else that seemed to be connected with the fact that the cop didn't show up.
No, the DA told me. I found out from the DA that the cop didn't show up.
Okay. But I thought the judge was asking you a question with that in mind, but I guess not. Okay. Anyway, try that, see if it works. You can battle it by challenging the jurisdiction, even though you're doing it kind of without the appearance ticket. The only thing the appearance ticket is saying that you're coming in by special appearance. So you can use those words, say, look, I don't know much about the law, but I'm getting some thoughts and ideas, blah, 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 blah. I want to let the court know that I'm coming in here by special appearance and I'm challenging jurisdiction. I don't think you have jurisdiction. And you could tell them, I know you have subject matter jurisdiction, but I don't believe you have personam jurisdiction because this case is a commercial case. It's a commercial a ticket. The ticket applies to commercial activity. I'm not operating anything commercially.
Okay.
And see where it goes and feel it out, I guess,
Yeah.
If you've got 30 days, if they come back with another day, then you could do something more official. Matter of fact, you make sure you get a record of what's going on in the court. What I would do, I don't know if you can get in there with a recorder, if you can, you know, there's lots of ways you can get in with a recorder that don't look like recorders. But the purpose of the recorder is really being able to write a really solid affidavit. So when you do these things and you can write a good affidavit on what took place in the court, what he said, what you said, what they said, and you put it in an affidavit, then you can then go and file in the state court that you want to move this case for cause for denial of due process, okay, and see once, because you challenge jurisdiction and he's denying it. You said the fact that, you know, yeah, and you want to ask them, you know, it's the law that on the top of the paper, any kind of a court case, they have to have the jurisdiction. So what's the jurisdiction here? That's the question. And if they kind of ignore that or whatever, because they're going to try to evade it somehow, you know, you could say to the court, look, at, you know, I don't have ballots, I'm trying to figure things out. So, you know, the question now is, how can I defend myself if I don't know the jurisdiction? In order to understand that jurisdiction, I have to know that jurisdiction. So please tell me, what is the jurisdiction of this court in this case?
Gotcha.
So that's, you know, make notes and just try to follow your notes.
Yeah, no, I'm definitely going to do that, and hopefully I don't go to jail for the next 30 days.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to put you in jail, but, you know, who knows what they're going to do. These people are insane.
Yeah, that's what I heard. This judge is kind of a prick.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to move on. It's getting
all right,
later.
Thank you.
2 minutes. I'll see how many people I can get in. We got a few people, pretty few people in the queue right now. But all right, thanks, Mike.
Hey, thank you.
Okay, Tim, you got the mic. What's your state, Tim?
Okay, I guess you were.
Oh, how you doing? Yep.
Yeah, how are you, John?
Good.
Long time no speak.
Yeah.
So from Connecticut. Okay, so I just. Trump seems to be doing, in quotation marks, the right thing. He's almost, what could be the word, like revolutionary. Presidents that should have been doing this before, somehow they didn't do it. They were threatened maybe by the deep state or whatever.
Threatened and killed.
Doesn't it seem like he's doing the right thing, in quotation marks? He's really revolutionizing things. Doesn't it seem like that to you? And he has
He's uniquely qualified, number one, and I do believe he's been protected.
How is he uniquely qualified, if you don't mind me interjecting that question? I didn't know he had experience.
Because, first of all, he does have some experience on how things work from his first run for the first 4 years that he ran for, you know, he was in office for, and he found out all the enemies. He understands a lot more from that. So that was helpful for him. But besides that, you know, you need a businessman, and he's a businessman. He's a negotiator, so he can fix a lot of problems. Plus, he sees how we've been ripped off by other countries, and he's fixing that problem. And he's fixing a lot of problems. Plus, he's got a lot of great people around him. You know, he's got someone like Musk, who really has the ability to reshape and find the problems within our different agencies and the waste and everything, because that's the focus, dealing with waste. And then trying to find some reorganizations. He says that the computer systems they have is really ancient, and they have to be updated, and, you know, and they don't have good controls. And so he's going to help to set all that up. Then you got someone like Kennedy, who's going to bring back health to us, dealing with the air, the water, the food, the medicines, all the crap they inject our children with, and so on and so forth. So and he's got a great AG, so it appears. We're going to find out more as time goes on. He's got a great AI.
What's the AG? AG?
Attorney General, Bondi.
Oh, okay.
And then he's got good people in the FBI. He's got a good people in the CIA. He's got a great guy in the Pentagon now. So he's got everything right where it's at. He realized he brought the right people in immediately, because now he knew who the players were, and he's a negotiator. He's difficult to beat in an argument. He's uniquely qualified. He understands the game, and to some degree, I think he's protected by a higher authority, in the sense that they tried to kill him twice, and I understand really they tried to kill him numerous times when he was president. Back, you know, in the first 4 years. Now, I don't know how true that was, but I've heard at least 10 different times they tried to take him out. But we don't read about that, if it's true.
By God, you mean, by God.
Yeah, that's exactly. Right. the governor of the universe. So anyway, but he's uniquely qualified for by the you know, he's just been business. He's been rubbing shoulders with the elite, rubbing shoulders with big business. He understands the economy very, very clearly. Matter of fact, that's one of the things he got a master in when he went to college, and in economics, and he knows real estate. All of this is important stuff. He's just uniquely qualified, you know. Like Jefferson. Jefferson was uniquely qualified. We wouldn't have America if Jefferson was not in the mix. We definitely would not be who we are as a people. Would not be here. He, the guy that discovered, you know, the America that he created with others, of course. But he's the guy who put it together. So from that standpoint, he's uniquely qualified.
Also, quickly here, even in his cabinet, I noticed the people that, I don't know, maybe all of them, but I know there's a lot of them in the cabinet that are have integrity this time, almost like a first.
That's the key right there. Yes, they're not. They don't have hidden agendas. Their only agenda is to make America great.
Yeah, like there's the guy from that's heading the FBI, and he's outspoken, and then there's again Elon Musk, and he's addressing directly the whatever, wherever our money, wherever our tax money is going, into maybe into illicit pockets. And yeah, it's like a first.
And he's a, and Trump is a peacemaker. He doesn't want war, but he's willing to take out the crazies. And he gives them a warning first, and he takes them out. So, look, we're in great shape in that sense. It's going to take a little time, but he's going to bring world peace, no doubt in my mind. It's going to be a whole new world. There's a lot of things that have been hidden from us, a lot of great inventions and different things that just have been hidden from us for a long time, and that's all going to be exposed. So,
I heard about that.
Technology is going to go really fly high. I'm concerned with AI, though.
What did you say is going to fly high? Sorry, I missed that. What's going to fly high?
The economy. I think I said the economy. But the AI is a big problem, okay? AI, there's a lot of things that could happen, but even if AI does not... let's say AI decides to take us out, okay? That's a potential possibility. I know Musk gives it a 20%. I saw a guy that was asking questions to AI. It was like over a 12-day period. He was asking these questions to AI, and he went to different platforms to ask these questions, and they all pretty much answered the same way. And one of the questions, and they were all questions that were devastating to mankind. One of the questions was, if you had to kill 100 people in order to, well, let me see how they put it. If 100 people had to die, or AI had to die, you know, what would you do? And the decision was to kill mankind, to kill the 100 people. And it went all the way up to 100,000 people. They'd kill 100,000 people. So that's the answers of AI. Now, think about this. The robotic, there's a lot of robots. There are going to be robots all over the place. They're robotic. The technology is there. The technology is already in the Tesla vehicles. And all that technology is just transported. It's already created and done, and he's just going to transport it over to the robots. It's already done. They got great balance. I mean, it's unbelievable, these robots that I'm seeing on YouTube now that's coming through Tesla. And so all of that could be part of the destruction of mankind. I do think that's a very strong possibility. But if that doesn't happen, we're just going to destroy ourselves, because we're going to become... You think we're morons now? Well, we ain't seen a moron yet until AI takes control of our children, because they don't have to do anything no more. Anything they do in school, they go home and just ask AI, and AI will write the report, do whatever they want, be creative, do the different projects that they have. I mean, it's just... The kids today, they can't read a map. They don't know how to tell time on a regular clock, with the 12 digits. There's so much that they don't know, and it, because of technology, it's a problem.
All things are in God's hand, right? As it says.
Absolutely.
He will even rule over the AI, right?
Well, look, I don't want to get into this discussion. Maybe we could discuss it at the Bible study if you want. But definitely, I will say definitely God is in control, of course. But I don't get into what the Bible says about this, because the Bible does have a lot to say about this time period that we're living in right now.
Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you for your response. Then maybe I will. I will, if I have time or whatever. Maybe I'll see you. I'll attend your Wednesday Bible study.
Okay. Yes. 7:30. Anybody else interested with that? 7:30, right here.
Okay.
So okay, Tim. Look forward to seeing you hopefully again.
All right. Take care. Thank you.
Bye bye. Okay, we've got a few people left in the queue, but we've reached the end of our call. Well, hopefully, we'll get to you next week. Try to get into the queue early. But with that, we're going to have to end the program for tonight. Thanks, everyone, for coming. We'll be back next Monday. Thank you. And bring guests, bring people. Let's grow. The more people we get, the more committees of safety potentially we can build. So, okay, good night.